Welcome back to The Zone. Sterling Holmes in for Jason Anderson. Dylan Michaels behind the glass. Thank you again to Matt Derrick. Make sure you check out all his great work, ChiefsDigest.com. Mick Schaefer joins at 1 o'clock. Have some fun with Mick. And then around 12:20, in just about 20 minutes or so, we'll play the interview that I did with Julian Edelman, as well as the interview I did with Ladd McConkey. We'll do the Ladd McConkey interview first, actually. Again, great time talking with both those guys. I learned a lot from talking with Ladd. I learned a lot as in, one, he can be a good and, quite frankly, a very willing returner in the NFL. I also learned that he's not a slot receiver primarily. He played more outside receiver at Georgia than he did in the slot. So I think he was getting pigeonholed into a wide receiver spot that, quite frankly, was unfair. So I talked to him, learned a lot. I think everyone who will hear the interview will find a better understanding, maybe even some people who want to see Ladd come to KC at 32 even more. I know I'm one of those guys. And then with Julian Edelman, I talked about the similarities of the Chiefs dynasty compared to the Patriots dynasty, some of the sameness, the differences. He was pretty glowing of KC. It was fun talking with him. And we talked about his performances in the playoffs as well as him playing defense. Yes, Edelman played defense against the Chiefs in 2011 and what it was like trying to go up and guard Jamaal Charles. So that interview will play again in about a half hour. All right, Dylan, you ready for something fun?
Always. I'm always ready for fun.
You seem thrilled, man. You seem like you're stoked
now. I'm just moving things around. So.
I know you're moving. Are you too busy right now to do our mock draft?
No. No, never too busy for mock drafts.
Don't sound so excited, man.
So how many rounds? Just the first round?
We're doing seven, but just with the Chiefs. We're doing just Chiefs.
Gotcha.
I'm not doing all... Dude, we don't have time to do all that. Come on now. We're doing PFF's simulator. Man, I sounded very country right there. Simulator. We're going to have some fun with this. All right. I don't ever do mock drafts. This is like the first one I've done all year. With me in control. So, Dylan, you're ready for this? I did the research. I just don't actually do it, and now we're doing it on air, so I don't have a chance to bolster my squad and make it look really good for social media. I don't do that. All right, we're on the clock. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness, PFF, you dog. All right, guess who went 31? Xavier Worthy. Guess who's still on the board?
Ladd McConkey.
Well, Ladd McConkey, yes. Jerzon Newton. If you know who he is, defensive lineman, Big 10 Defensive Player of the Year from Illinois. A lot of folks have him going top 20. Most people think he's not getting outside the top 25. This guy, Jerzon Newton, had 13 sacks over the past two seasons as an interior defensive lineman. If you want a guy who can, I don't want to say the heir to Chris Jones, but if you wanted a guy who can be alongside Chris Jones on the inside and get pressure, this is the dude you want. If you want a guy who, when Chris Jones kicks to edge on obvious passing down situations, and you want a guy who can still play on the interior, that's Jerzon Newton. A couple other guys on the board is Kool-Aid McKinstry. Cornerback from Alabama. We got Troy Franklin, obviously. Ladd McConkey. Dylan, I'm going to roll with Jerzon Newton. I know people might not like it. I'm going interior defensive lineman because I think he is a legit first-round prospect. I get he might not be a need. He might be more of a want. But when you have this on the board, you roll with it. So I'm going Newton at 32. We drafted him. Dylan gave me a thumbs up. We're down at 64.
Sixty-four.
and some good names, some interesting names. We have Andrew Phillips, cornerback from Kentucky. We have Marshawn Kneeland, edge rusher from Western Michigan. That's who Matt Derrick rolled with. Jermaine Burton, if you want to deal with the potential off-the-field issues. Devontae Walker from UNC, who is a potential boom or bust type of guy. Again, this is where it gets tricky for Kansas City, because if they stay at 64 and they do not draft wide receiver in the first round, wide receiver list right now starts to really get tight. You start getting into more of the boomer busts with less floor. Again, the Burtons, the Walkers, the Javon Bakers, Johnny Wilson, Jamari Thrash, which seems way too high in the second. All right, Dylan, what are we doing? What are we going to do at 64? Do we go with the...
Jermaine Burton.
I think Burton, too. As much as I want to go maybe best player available with cornerback Andrew Phillips.
Burton. Because you're not going to have another chance at a, like you said, wide receiver gets thin after this.
Yeah. You going Burton?
Yep.
All right.
I said Burton a long time ago.
I get it, baby. The off-the-field stuff does not bother you. Or at least
it doesn't bother me, but it's something that I feel like, you know, you have to do your homework on. I don't have the, you know, ability to do my homework on every single thing he's done.
Sure.
I just feel like if Nick Saban has been able to put him in that culture and it be a little bit better than it was before at Georgia, then there's a chance.
Yeah.
You just got to do your homework.
I'm with you. And again, I've said for a while now with the Rashee Rice situation, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, now you can't draft a guy with any potential off-the-field stuff. My thought process is, we didn't hear about any red flags from Rashee Rice. The only guy who really heard from was Keyshawn Johnson, right? And so my point is, you can draft a guy who you think is never going to get in trouble. You can draft a guy who you think is just, oh man, he wouldn't do that. You just never know, man. You never know. And so if you never know, look at George Pickens right now, right? Remember some of the concerns with Pickens? Hey, Dylan, what's Pickens done in the NFL?
Pretty good with a bad quarterback.
But has he had any issues? Has he had, I mean, if you want to say me first, maybe.
I'd say the blocking thing.
Would you have the blocking thing, or would you rather have.
Right. I agree.
And so my point is, guys can have red flags all they want coming out of college. You never know. So I know a lot of people use the Rashee Rice situation and say you can't draft a guy with red flags. I almost say, you know what? At some point, because you don't know, draft the talent. Draft the more talented player. Draft the DK Metcalf. Draft the George Pickens over Sky. So in this one, we're drafting Burton in the second round. We get to the third round here, Dylan. Third round, 95. Johnny Wilson, the big tight end from Florida State. Right? Big tight end from Florida State. Javon Solomon, the edge rusher from Troy. I think Eric All from Iowa, that's too pricey for my taste. You have Ben Sinnott, Dominique Pooney, Christian Mahogany from Boston College, who I think is a very intriguing prospect. Let's stick with these three, Dylan. Dominique Pooney, the tackle from Kansas, who I think can play most likely guard, but who could probably move out to tackle in a pinch. But if you want your super sub, I think Dominique Pooney's your guy. Ben Sinnott, who I think is maybe the second or third best tight end in this draft. Whatever your thoughts are on Jatavion Sanders from Texas, I think Ben Sinnott is probably three. 40-inch vertical, 6'4". I'm intrigued with Ben Sinnott. And then again, Christian Mahogany, your guard, who I think is going to be a very solid guard. And whatever your thoughts are on Joe Tooney or Trey Smith, I think Mahogany is the guy that you could plug and play whenever they're gone. Between those three guys, Dylan, who you rolling with?
I don't know who you got, because I think they're all pretty solid, same people. I'd go Pooney just with the KU bias a little bit.
Sure.
But
my thought was honestly Ben Sinnott.
Yeah.
My thought was tight end, and I think there's more upside with Sennett if you can get him in the third round.
That feels like that won't be there, but I will have Ben Sennett in the third round.
Well, I think Ben Sennett is a third round guy. I don't think he's going to the second personally.
We all don't know.
Eric All may be going before him, or Eric All might be a fifth rounder. Yeah. Like we're using PFF simulator right now. We have it set up on normal randomness. I think we're going Ben Sennett. I know PFF's not going to like it because they're going to want us to take probably Dominic Pooney because he has a T and not a TE listed by his name. But I think Ben Sennett is too good of value to not pick up there. All right, now we get to pick 131. Well, maybe we should have gone with Pooney because Theo Johnson from Penn State on the board still. Jared Wiley from TCU still on the board there. Dwayne Carter, interior defensive lineman from Duke on the board. I think he's been going up some folks' draft boards as well. Will Shipley still on the board. I'm going Will Shipley.
Yeah, I liked that pick.
That pick for Matt Derrick in the fourth. That's not too high for you for a running back, is it? You're not getting a little...
There's only one round that is too high for a running back. So.
Well, there's multiple. First and second.
Nah, you can get a second round running back. Would you have taken Jonathan Taylor where he's at?
If you know what you know now.
Well, yes, that means that there's a good second rounder.
Would you have taken J.K. Dobbins?
We seem to want him this year.
Didn't get him this year. Didn't want him that much, did they? The injuries. I mean, injuries are always a part. Right. It's always 2020.
And dude was an absolute stud when he was on the field. So.
All right, I got Will Shipley. Now we're getting into the fifth round. Now we're getting into the fun. Now we're getting into the... you could have had Cody Schrader. Oh, I like this pick. I'm sorry. Javon Foster. We'll get our tackle right now, Javon Foster. I'm going to go with... who do you want to go with here in the sixth round? Dylan, we can go with either...
Well, they could draft another Missouri player so that it's insulated from any type of criticism if they're not that great, like they did with another position on our team.
That wasn't Missouri, though.
Nick Bolton didn't go to Missouri?
He's incredible!
Oh, he's great, yeah. He's really good.
Why are you being...
He is a very serviceable linebacker. I'm just trying to hopefully
We're getting into this right now. No, we're getting into this right now. I'm not seeing
you better than Fred Warner.
No, what? Roquan
Smith.
What? You're naming the two best linebackers in football, guy.
The highest paid.
In the two best linebackers in football, guy.
Right. So you would pay them. You'd pay Nick Bolton more than them because that's what's going to happen.
When did I ever say, Dylan, Nick Bolton's a good linebacker? To you equating that with me wanting to pay Nick Bolton more.
I'm saying I don't want to pay him. I said he's serviceable, but don't pay him a contract over other guys like Trey Smith, Creed Hunt, things like, you know, players that you can pay top of the market value and actually pass that off as a good deal.
You would pay, we're a little off topic, but I think this is actually a really fun conversation, and I don't care that much about the sixth and seventh round. I'm going to pick my guys that I want, and I'm going to go with there so we can get our final grade.
And they'll pick someone we've
never
heard of, too.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Actually, I've heard of them. It's actually from Matt Derrick's draft, and I trust him. Okay. You would pay Trey Smith over Nick Bolton. That's your thought process right now.
Yep.
Disagree.
Why?
Nick Bolton... is the green dot defensively. He is the leader.
So was Ben Neiman at one point.
Don't equate Ben Neiman with Nick Bolton here.
I'm just saying that...
And Tyron Smith and Dan Sorensen both play safety.
Right, and that was also the reason they had to be on the field, because they get everyone into position. Like, no one else in the planet can do that with a couple years under the system if you draft well and actually get... Because he was a second rounder. Nick Bolton was, and he's been serviceable. He's been a great, you know, good to great linebacker. I just wouldn't pay him a second contract. Because he's going to... Those two guys I named, how many rings do they have? Zero. So, if you're his agent, I would be slamming on that.
Dog, you're not saying rings for a middle linebacker.
If you're his agent?
Sure.
You're not talking about all the success he's had in the postseason, all the tackles he's made?
Sure, but my point is here. Nick Bolton is an integral part of this defense. He was a big part of the turnaround of the mindset one of the highest IQ.
Frank Clark wasn't. Tyrann Mathieu wasn't.
It's age, too. Nick Bolton is at the same age of those, as those guys. We're not talking about a third contract for these dudes. We're talking about a second contract for these guys. I would say him with Drew Tranquil and how many more years? Two more years of Leah Chenal.
I think you paid your green dot in Drew Tranquil. That's the money that you spend on a green dot. It's Drew Tranquil to replace and then bridge the gap from Bolton to the next one that might be on a little younger.
Well, then you're starting to draft a linebacker this year. You're trying to draft a linebacker this or next year then.
Sure.
I think you can get... I think it's easier to find a guard than a middle linebacker that does what Nick Bolton does.
I think tomatoes, tomatoes, because I think they're both... You can find them late. You don't have to.
And by the way, I'm not saying you pay Nick Bolton top dollar.
I just think that's what he wants. And
everyone wants
want
that.
Right.
Everyone wants to be paid top dollar. Doesn't mean you're going to get it.
So it shouldn't be here.
I don't think he gets top dollar to begin with. I don't think any team is going to see Nick Bolton and say, a guy who has some deficiencies in pass coverage, we're making him higher paid than Fred Warner. I don't think we see that. That's my issue, too. Or I wouldn't even say an issue. That's my conversation here. I don't think he gets that money. Trey Smith, I think, again, going with Matt Derrick as well, I think Trey Smith is getting 60 mil guaranteed. I think you see Trey Smith get a extremely large contract, especially what you have seen with the guard market exploding this past offseason. Where's the linebacker market? Has the middle linebacker market all of a sudden exploded? No! I didn't mean to get into an argument with you, Dylan, because but don't do my Nick Bolton like that. That dude gets unfair hate, in my opinion. Don't like it. Don't do that to me.
Okay, so it goes Roquan Smith at $20 million, Fred Warner at $19 million, Tremaine Edmonds at $18 million. Then C.J. Mosley, $17 million, Lua Khan, $15 million with the Jags. Matt Milano, 14.2, to just round it out with a known name there.
And we obviously know that how contracts work, it's next man up, right? It doesn't always mean the best player, Mahomes.
That's what I'm saying, though. Don't do it. Don't give
you
Nick
don't
Bolton
do it. But if you give him, let's say, $17 million a year, you win? $16 million a year, you win?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're on the same page then. We're arguing, and we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, there you go. That's how it works.
Look at that. Look at that, America. We can have different viewpoints and still agree. Look at us go.
If only that could translate to another genre of topics outside of sports.
Yeah, LeBron versus
Jordan.
Michael versus Jordan, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're going for, right? That's
yeah,
what you're talking about?
That's okay. What I meant.
All right, PFF gave us a overall draft grade of B+. We went Jerzon Newton, first round, 32. That was an A-plus grade. Jermaine Burton from Alabama, wide receiver. That was a B grade. He was drafted at 64 by us. Ben Sinnott, tight end from K-State. That was a C-minus grade. I told you we weren't going to get a great grade because it's a T-E, not a T. I don't care. I like that pick. Fourth round, we went with Will Shipley, running back from Clemson. Javon Foster in the fifth round, tackle from Missouri. Fifth round, safety. We went Oladapo from Oregon State, the safety. That's actually who exactly Matt Derrick went with. And then I went with a little wild card in the seventh. I went with Bub Means, wide receiver from Pittsburgh. Double down. So PFF gave us a B+. What do you think there, Dylan? How did we do?
I think it's A+.
I think we did a damn good job.
An A++.
Right?
I agree.
For my first mock draft.
That was a real draft.
Legit
like we actually
mock
argued
draft.
About a prospect, too, in the middle of it. Like
yes,
that's
we
a
did.
Real life
that's
draft.
A real draft. And we argued so long that we were actually off the clock and it got passed and it auto-selected. That's a real draft, baby. That's a real draft. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Up next, we'll be joined by Ladd McConkey. After that, we'll be joined by Julian Edelman. The Zone right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to The Zone. Sterling Holmes again in studio. No Jason Anderson. I recorded a couple of very, very fun interviews over the past couple days. One, a man who is heading to the NFL draft in Ladd McConkey. a guy who I think a lot of folks, myself included, would not be upset if the Chiefs drafted at 32 in this year's draft. So we'll play the interview from Ladd McConkey in just a moment, but I also want to set up, I did have a chance to talk with three-time Super Bowl champion Julian Edelman, and it was a lot of fun getting his thoughts in regards to the similarities and differences between the New England Patriots dynasty as well as what's going on in Kansas City. He actually was very glowing, and we talked about a specific game in 2011 that Edelman played against the Chiefs that I think might surprise some people. First up, Ladd McConkey.
There's an elephant in the room here because I'm a Mizzou alum. So I just have to say thank you for destroying all my hopes and dreams last year. Thought the Tigers were going to get it done. And then, of course, you go for what, 9-7-95, just crushing me, lad.
Yeah, it was a good game, though. Even like last year, y'all always played us well. So I respect Missouri for sure.
I do want to point out, when you were playing with a team that has elite expectations like Georgia, how do you feel that translates to a team in the NFL, right? Where in college, sometimes, I'm not saying you particularly, but some guys are me first guys. When you get to the NFL, it's all team first. But you have that expectations already in college. How do you think that translates?
Yeah, I mean, at Georgia, I feel like we, you know, kind of developed that, you know, championship DNA. We want to go out there and win. We want to get the job done. We're going, you know, whatever we do, we're going to put our best foot forward. So I feel like at Georgia, they develop us, and it will definitely translate in kind of every way possible to the NFL. So, you know, Coach Smart had us ready along with all the other coaches. So hopefully I can bring, you know, some of that with me to whatever team I end up with.
I know you had a very nice 4.39 blazing out there. Combine as a whole went very well for you. Was it what you expected? How do you train for something like that? Because obviously in a game, you're rocking pads. You're not out there in shorts and a t-shirt trying to go 40 yards in a straight line. How did you try and train for that?
Yeah, so I was actually training in Exos in Pensacola. So it was, you know, kind of completely different training than I've been used to. You know, like when you want to do a set or whatever you're doing, then let your body recover. At Georgia, we're like, all right, let's line up. Like, we're getting the best shape possible. Like, we're doing all this, grinding, doing that. But it was different. But I like it. You know, they did a great job down there. And I was happy with my results.
I'm sure the interview process for you has also been underway. Have you had any weird questions so far?
Someone asked me that, and I was fully, like, you know, as prepared as I could be, I guess, to get some crazy questions, because that's what everyone has said, but I haven't had anything too out of the ordinary, so I was kind of upset. I was like, dang, I was ready for some.
You were waiting. You had them all written down. They're like, I have it planned.
Ready for some.
When you're talking to these different teams, how have they been viewing you? Is it pretty one versus one, like, hey, you'll be doing this, you'll be doing that? Or are a lot of them coming to you saying, hey, we view you as a slot. We view you as moving all over the field. What have those conversations been like?
Yeah, most of the teams have really said, like, that they see me as a guy that can kind of move around. They're like, you know, at first, I feel like my label was I'm going to be a slot receiver. But, you know, now teams, like, you know, talking to me, see me run routes and going back and watch my film and like really understanding I played more outside than I did inside at Georgia. I feel like they kind of are starting to see that it's going to be able to translate both ways at the next level as well.
Yeah, I know. I know that, again, as a Mizzou fan, I know you can play outside very, very well. Again, going back to that route running prowess that you have, how do you work on something like that? Obviously, there's the athleticism side, but also the mental side of trying to manipulate. Because it's great when you run a 4.39, but just liken it to, let's say, for example, Travis Kelce in the NFL. Dude's not the fastest guy, but the way he shakes, the way he's able to create separation, manipulating the guys on him. How do you view that breakdown of getting better and improving your route running?
Yeah, and it's like, it's kind of, I feel like it's a lot about understanding leverage. You don't got to run full speed, you know, every single route. You can kind of tempo it down and do stuff in between routes. So, but it all just comes with reps. I think at the end of the day, it's like, whether that's, you know, in practice working on something or, you know, before or after practice, getting some reps in. So it's really good to run full speed reps, but in full routes, but you don't always have to do that. You know, you can work on your craft and work on top of routes, releases. And then when it's time to put it all together, that's when you go out and do that.
Do you like outside more than slot, or where do you prefer? Do you even have a preference?
I don't care. Shoot, wherever I get the ball, that's where I want to be.
I know you had 21 punt returns at Georgia your first 2 years, but your final year, no punt returns. Was that a Georgia choice? Was that a you saying, hey, I'm trying to get more involved just offensively? Don't want to take some stamina, yeah. some of that away. Would you do punt returns in the NFL? Where do you view this here?
Yeah. No, with the stamina thing and stuff, man, like, put me out there. That's another opportunity to get the ball in my hands. So, no, but the reason I didn't do it is I missed those first four games. We had a kid that was doing it, and he did it good. Like, he had a touchdown. So they just let him roll with it, and shoot, I supported him through that. But that is definitely something I want to do at the next level, you know, having conversations with coaches, caught some punts in my pro day as well. So
nice. I saw you grew up a fan of the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yeah.
You grew up in Georgia. One, why were you a Volunteers fan? And two, why did you choose Georgia over Tennessee?
So my family, we were huge Tennessee fans, you know, my grandfather, my dad, brother. That's just kind of how it was. We grew up Tennessee fans. But, yeah, the reason I went to Georgia is I didn't get an offer from Tennessee. So I can't say that, you know, I wouldn't have been there if they would have offered me, but it all worked out just how it was supposed to.
Was there a little something extra when you played Tennessee, a little bit of, come on now?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, yeah. You're like, it's just like I grew up watching them. Like, so, yeah, a little bit. I don't know what it was, but there was something.
What do you say to folks who might have some pushback? I've seen some of this and just the national media of, you know, Ladd McConkey, great route runner. We know what he can do, but we've not necessarily seen the production at the college level. Obviously, there's some guys who are going for, you know, over 1,000 yards receiving. They're the focal points of the offense. I get how Georgia's offense is run. What pushback do you say to those people?
Well, if you look at our roster, honestly, like if you look, I got Brock Bowers, I got Ra-Ra Thomas, I got Dom Lovett, I got Marcus Rosen, I got Kendall Milton, Dejon Edwards. Like, we have guys that got to get the ball. So that's just the way it is. Like, we shared it. We weren't really like a, you know, pass only, run only. We shared the ball around. And in this past year, like if you really look at the games I played and the games I was out there, I put up the numbers. Just got me, unfortunate injuries kind of held me back some this year. So I feel like I was set up for a big year this year. Just didn't happen the way I wanted it to.
What is something that people listening might not know about Ladd McConkey? Can be on the field, off the field. What's something that folks might not know about you?
I can play some ping pong. Yeah. Come play me in ping pong.
Oh, man. I'll take that challenge.
All okay. Right. Hey, let's do it.
I'll take you in that challenge. I'm going to say something here. You won back-to-back titles at Georgia. The Chiefs have won back-to-back Super Bowls. They're in the market for a wide receiver. Yeah. They're sitting there a little bit where your draft stock's at. Have you thought about Kansas City much? And have you talked with the Chiefs at all?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. They're, you know, a great organization. Won, you know, Super Bowls back-to-back. Like, great quarterback, great coaches, great team. So, nothing but great things to say about them. You know, I've met with them a little bit at the Senior Bowl. So we'll see what comes out of it.
I'm just saying, again, I'm here in Kansas City. We got a lot of Ladd McConkey to Kansas City. Yeah. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that one out there. Before I let you go here, what is a team getting when they draft you? What's a team getting in totality when they draft Ladd McConkey?
Yeah, I think they're getting a guy, you know, that's bringing in, like you said, a championship DNA. I know how to win. I feel like we've done it at the college level. A guy that, you know, come in and contribute day one. So whatever you need me to do, I feel like I can get the job done.
Again, two-time champion right there in college with Georgia, 2024 NFL draft prospect Ladd McConkey. Ladd, really appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I did love the little smirk he gave at the very beginning when he when I said I was a Mizzou alum, and that little smirk he gave was it got me. I will say, though, I personally learned a lot about him as a returner, where he fits. I think he does get thrown into the slot category when in reality he played more on the outside at Georgia. Again, I think the more I learned about Ladd, the more I've dug into what he did at Georgia, the more enamored I am as far as him being a legitimate pick for Kansas City at 32. Again, I liken him to George Karloftis, where the ceiling might not be the highest. He might not have the highest ceiling. Again, obviously, you're drafting at 32, but even at some of the guys that you could potentially draft at 32. But I think the floor is such that game one, week one, you can plug and play. And again, with the what is going to happen with Rashee Rice, I don't hate that. Again, you don't want to give up necessarily, you know, four games for 5 years. But at the same time, I think Ladd McConkey is a guy that is going to give you a damn good 5 years as well. Next up, we have the interview I did with Julian Edelman. Joined now by three-time Super Bowl champion and man who seemingly crushed all my hopes and dreams as a Chiefs fan growing up, Julian Edelman. Julian, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing outstanding. For everyone here who is listening, if you want a personal FaceTime with Julian, if you want to fly on the Patriots team plane, if you want to announce the Pats' third-round selection, well, guess what? Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL Draft, is partnering with three-time Super Bowl champion Julian Edelman and the New England Patriots, and they're making this dream a reality with Bud Light's Easy Wishes NFL Draft experience, where one 21-plus Patriots fan will experience the thrill of the NFL Draft weekend like never before. As part of the brand's ongoing commitment to bringing unforgettable experiences to NFL fans. Julian, tell us more about this, man.
Yeah, you know, playing for the Patriots, the relationship with the Patriots and Bud Light was always around. To having a chance to partner up with Bud Light for this Bud Light Easy Wishes NFL draft experience to give one fan an unbelievable experience, I thought it was a slam dunk. You know, this is a time of year where every organization has hope. Every organization has hope. Every fan base has hope. And, you know, New England Patriots not being in this specific position for a long time, having a top 10 pick since, you know, 2008, who we picked Gerard Mayo, our head coach, with that pick. You know, this is going to be a fun draft for some fan to go and experience the drive, you know, fly on the team plane, have a, you know, I'm going to FaceTime with you if you like that or you don't. Maybe we can talk some smack to each other. And this would honestly be, how unbelievable would it be, since this is a Kansas City radio station, how crazy would it be if a Kansas City fan won this thing? What if the Kansas City fans go onto any of the Bud Light social media platforms, any of them, and just start hashtagging Easy Wishes, Easy Wishes, Easy Wishes, and one of the Kansas City fans gets to go, like you said, into the New England Patriots organization and have that experience with probably some Travis Kelce jersey on or a Patrick Mahomes jersey on, you know, and kind of just rub it in our face because we – you know, when I was there, that was easy. That was easy, easy work. But, you know, now that the Chiefs are the Chiefs of now, you know, they can give some salt back to the Patriots. But this is really for the Patriots fans. I'm sorry, Chiefs fans.
I do want to say,
Easy Wishes NFL Draft Experience. Hashtag Easy Wishes, baby.
I do want to talk about the similarities and the differences, because who better to ask than you, someone who was a major part of one of the greatest dynasties throughout sports. Now we're seeing the Chiefs try and following in the Patriots' footsteps here. What similarities and what differences do you see with Kansas City and New England?
You know, one of the similarities that was really apparent this year and last was their ability to adjust their team with the players that they have and find a formula to go out and win. I mean, you know, it was really impressive for the team, you know, to lose Tyreek Hill and then be able to replace him and you know, start beefing up that defense. And they, you know, still have production on offense last year and then to repeat it this year with, you know, probably not their best receiving core. I mean, they did lead the league in drops. So, but, you know, when those players needed to make plays for the team in the playoffs and important plays, they made plays. And they were able to rely on that defense that was playing stout. So, you know, the ability to transform your team each year, you know, is something that I can relate to. You know, and especially now you're America's most wanted. You're on that you're the bounty, bro. Everyone circles you every year, and they get everyone's best every week. You know, every team thinks if, you know, you go out and beat the Chiefs in week 3, week 8, week 7, You know, coaches think they're going to get new jobs. Players think they're going to get paid. You know, we did that for 20 years, you know, so it's impressive to see what they're doing, and I wish them the best.
I will say, just alluding to that as well, some teams have that ability to turn it on in the playoffs. Patriots did it. The Chiefs did it. During the regular season, maybe you sit back just a little bit. Long season, it's a grind. Playoffs come around. All of a sudden, you guys are fresh. I think you're an example. You 50 yards per game in the regular season and come postseason, averaging over 75 yards per game. I mean, your most memorable moments came on the biggest stage. How were you able to take it to that next level when the lights were the brightest?
You know, like you said, you're not like, so the season when you're winning, you lose players. So, you know, great teams can go out and configure their team while also getting wins. And that's what the Chiefs had to do all year. Okay, so they had to learn what made them their best. Just like we had to learn, you know, we go 2-2. Everyone thinks we're going to, you know, we were out in what, 14, this, that. You come on, win the Super Bowl. Like, you're still configuring and seeing what you have from that's different from the year before. What's this specific team? And then once you find that formula, that's when you ride it out through the playoffs. You know, and I just so happen to be part of a lot of the formula when – you know, we needed it in the playoffs. You know, that's when you don't leave anything in the bag. That's when, you know, you're not playing the tendency game where we're trying to run, you know, or you're blowing teams out and you're not throwing the ball anymore. You know, like, there's a lot of things and similarities that you see with the Chiefs that we had. So, and also preparation, you know, our preparation in New England was tough, you know, starting with, you know, how coach handled the practices, how Tom was a leader in the practices and always practiced with a purpose, even though he had the most success out of anyone on the team. To see your leader go out and always be practicing hard, it makes everyone have to fall in line. And so the practices were tough. And then when you get to the game moment, if you practice hard, we always do say practice execution becomes game reality. It's just deja vu. So that's probably why I had some of my best games in the.
I want to ask you a little Julian Edelman history question here. I don't know if you remember a specific Week 11 game you played on Monday Night Football against the Kansas City Chiefs. Is there any Monday Night Football game against the Chiefs that stands out to you?
Well, it wasn't the one where we got blown out, was it?
It's the one where you returned a punt 72 yards for a touchdown.
Charles.
And you played defense in the game.
Yeah, that was in 2011. I housed a punt that game.
Yeah, you housed a punt, and you're playing cornerback.
Yeah, I was playing dime. So you guys had Jamal Charles. We were banged up on defense. And so, you know, the week before, I think we played the Jets. And you know, they put me in late in the game on defense to see how I can do it. And then I had a package against the Chiefs, because that's when Jamal Charles, they were using him out of the backfield a whole lot. And so we put this dime package they had, and I had to cover Charles.
Did you dig it, man? I mean, I can't imagine all of a sudden, you know, first off, you're a quarterback in college. Then all of a sudden, now you're a return specialist and wide receiver. Now the Patriots like, hey, man, if that's not enough, we want you to play dime and make sure you go up against Jamal. What was that like, the transition of all of a sudden, now you're playing a little defense?
Well, you know, we did the same thing back when Troy Brown was there at the Patriots, and he actually had an interception. They were banged up. Troy Brown went in there and played nickel and played really well. So to see someone be able to go do it that's done it in our system, I was like, all right, I can go do it, whatever. And defense was fun. You know, like, it was hard because you have to do everything in a backpedal. But I was able to cheat because I would just study situations and down and distance. And I'd always be in on like a third down, and you could just study their concepts of what they liked. And I knew that receivers hated the line of scrimmage. Just hold as long as you can for that 5 yards and just pester them and try to get them off. Like, I would just do those types of things. The things that receivers hated, it honestly helped me as a receiver, because being in the defensive back room, you know, I would go to those meetings. You know, you learn what they're being taught, and it helped me with my route running going forward as well. So it was a fun experience.
Before I let you go here, Julian, what are your thoughts on the new kickoff rules? Would you have dug this? I feel like you would have thrived with these new kickoff rules coming up.
No, I think it's going to be exciting. I'm very excited about it because it's going to give this play a shot to be played. You know, it's going to be very similar to like a punt return, because there's only one wave. You know, when I first got in the league, we had the three-man wedge. You know, you get through the penetrators, there's one wave. Then you have the second group, there's another wave. And there was always a trap for the returner, which is very different than punt returning. Punt returning, they're all coming to you at the same wave. And you would always want to, you know, try to bring the defense into you, then go to your return side and stick a foot and go and get vertical. If you break that wave, you're good. So it's going to be a fun play. I'm excited to see it. And I'm also excited for the special teamers to, you know, still be able to have a play. I mean, they're trying to eliminate that thing. This maybe give us a shot. Now, it's crazy. I just remember when there was literally guys on the team, Bubba Ventrone, that were 205 pounds, and their job was to run 90 yards into the 310-pound guy. Like, I loved it. That's football. But this new stuff is cute, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm too soft for that. So, yeah, that's not me. Couldn't do that. I know myself. I'm very soft. But everyone who is 21-plus who's listening to this, make sure you go to Bud Light's Facebook and Instagram pages. Make sure you comment easy wishes, hashtag easy wishes, and why you want to go to the 2024 NFL Draft. 3-time Super Bowl champion, Julian Edelman. Julian, really appreciate it, man.
Had fun, man.
Honestly, if he played for any other team besides the Patriots, no, man, he's such a good dude. Julian Edelman is entertaining. He was fun. He was engaged. It's fun. I recorded that on Zoom, and I think he enjoyed actually talking about Kansas City to an extent, because I'm sure he gets all the Bill Belichick and Tom Brady questions all the time. So the fact he actually got to talk about him playing defense and trying to guard Jamal Charles out of the backfield, that's probably a story he hasn't told very much on air. So I thought that was very cool. That was going back to that 2011 Monday night game. I did love the fact that when I brought up the Chiefs, originally goes, oh, you're going to bring up the time that the Chiefs just absolutely clobbered the Patriots. But no, come on. I'm not going to do that to you, Julian. But yeah, man, I think he is a guy that if he played for any other team, I think a lot of other fans around the league would have a lot of they would have loved watching him play even more. But I appreciate Julian Edelman and I appreciate Ladd McConkey both for taking their time doing the interview with me right here. Just heads up, I got a few more interviews that I will be doing throughout the week heading up into the NFL draft. Xavier Leggett, be interviewing Xavier Leggett, wide receiver from South Carolina. That's actually being interviewed today. Be dropping sometime next week, as well as I'll be interviewing Lions wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, as well as Lions quarterback Jared Goff. If you guys want to check that out, feel free to follow me on Twitter at HomestretchKC. Everything will be posted there. Hopefully we'll get the shows played on here as well, some of the interviews if we have time. But if not, you can find it all at my Twitter account at HomestretchKC. We'll take a break, come back. The Zone rolls on. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to The Zone. Sterling Holmes, no Jason Anderson. We'll be joined by Mick Schaefer in just one moment. Got an adult back in the room now, Dylan. We will finally have, well, can we call Mick an adult again? He's like the Pete Davidson. He's the resident young guy. He's older than us, but he is somehow still the resident old guy. The Royals play tonight at 6:40 on the bump for KC. You have Alec Marsh, 2-0 with a 4.32 ERA, heading up against Dean Kramer. Dean Kramer, 0-1, 4.96 Royals half game back of the Cleveland Guardians, and the Royals still have the best run differential in all of baseball. Mick Schaefer, up next.